Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on Newstalk.
The Planning and Development Act was supposed to speed up the delivery of big infrastructure projects by limiting the number of applications permissible. Thus far, there is no evidence of the Act doing what it says on the tin. So why do we have an objection culture in this country, given the urgency of improving our infrastructure? And why even bother investing new money if everything will be blocked or delayed in the courts? Alice Whittaker is a partner with the law firm Philip Lee, who has worked on a myriad of notable projects, such as the Dublin Incinerator and the forthcoming Dublin Array wind energy project. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
Why do we have an objection culture?
Well, I think we have an objection culture because we have quite an actively involved society, people who want to get involved, people who are very educated as well. And I think we have people who have a very strong attachment to their property, to their land, particularly in cities where they've spent an awful lot on houses. And perhaps also we have a culture where access to the courts is protected and to some extent also encouraged by the courts themselves, which protect the constitutional right to access to the courts to bring cases where people want to vindicate their private property rights. And so whilst the public good is, you know, inherent in the legislation, sometimes that gets a little bit lost when it comes to individual concerns about how projects are going to affect them personally.
Quite a few people would blame your profession, the legal profession, for quite a few of the delays, that some of the barristers who take these cases get paid very well and they're paid on both sides.
Well, I wouldn't say just the barristers and solicitors, probably everybody involved. I mean, I think there is a degree of truth in that. I think sometimes when it comes down to commenting on legislation, on, you know, what would be appropriate, there's a certain degree of vested interest when people are talking about access to the courts because, you know, it is a profession. It is the work that people do day in, day out. But on the other hand, quite a lot of people that I know personally who are involved in the area of planning law are disheartened by the amount of objections or judicial review, for example, that's taken in the courts, which has resulted in the judges in charge of the planning lists in the courts actually curtailing hearings, reducing them down to 3 hours instead of a week, you know, fast-tracking hearings, putting an awful lot more on paper and less in terms of oral argument, which actually makes the process, dare I say it, a bit less fun, a bit less enjoyable as a professional, but much more efficient, I guess, in terms of getting through a large number of cases.
So the courts are reacting and yes, they are speeding up the process.
Very much so, yes.
You worked on the incinerator project in Dublin. That must have been a planning nightmare.
Certainly, there were challenges. There was a lot of interest in it, but the interest was very localised. So it was primarily people in the Sandy Mountain Merion Residents Association area, I guess people who could see it, who were most concerned about it. The Dublin City Council had engaged in a lengthy period of consultation. So people knew an awful lot about the project before it went in for planning. But there was an oral hearing organised by On Bord Pleanála at the time, and they anticipated so much interest in it that they actually hosted it in Croke Park. and there were buses laid on to bring people from parts of the country to come in and object to it. But in fact, after about a day or two, interest waned and the hearing was then moved to the Gresham. And it was done on a much more kind of concise basis.
More discreet basis.
Yeah.
And it got passed. I just wonder whether that would have taken longer if the Aarhus Convention, which stipulates that environmental concerns are elevated when it comes to the planning process, if the Aarhus Convention had been in force.
Yeah, I used to claim a great success that any of the projects that I'd worked on had not been the subject of judicial review. But, you know, on mature reflection, the legal costs rules changed in and around. Well, the Aarhus Convention had certain legal cost rules, but they were interpreted by the courts as only applying where somebody was bringing a judicial review and their grounds of challenge were firmly grounded in European environmental law, not in relation to, say, general planning concerns about traffic impacts or localised impacts. However, there was a judgment in the High Court and then subsequently in the Supreme Court in Heather Hill in 2019 that found that any proceedings taken under the Planning Acts, challenging a decision under the Planning Acts, were covered by these special costs rules. And that opened the door to bringing judicial review on a very wide range of grounds, not just those relating to strictly protected species or European sites that are protected as a matter of European law, but issues more to do with impact on traffic, on property prices, on domestic issues.
Which means even if you're building a short stretch of road, you have to do this environmental impact statement, which delays and costs more.
Yeah, at the very least, you have to do an environmental impact screening and prove that a big environmental impact assessment is not required. And, you know, that's often an issue that is raised in the judicial review process, is whether a project like a cycleway actually requires environmental impact assessment at all, and if so, whether there was an appropriate screening done to determine what those environmental impacts might be.
Was I being unfair when I was describing the Planning and Development Act as potentially dead on arrival?
I wouldn't call it dead on arrival. There's an awful lot of good in it. I think there was an expectation built that it would restrict access to judicial review to individuals or to people who are only raising issues that are of personal concern to them, but it doesn't do that. So if you are interested in a planning issue and you put in a submission to a planning application, you then have an entitlement to go to the High Court for judicial review. You have to have substantial grounds of challenge, but you have an entitlement to ask for judicial review. If you're part of a residents' association, there are stricter rules for that association. There are also rules about not raising issues in judicial review that you didn't raise during the planning process. So you kind of have to reveal your cards and you can't sort of try and ambush a developer at the judicial review stage. So there's tightening up of those sort of rules. But in general, if an individual can still bring a challenge if they so wish and if they have substantial grounds to challenge.
Could the government, in theory, not introduce new legislation elevating the so-called common good above the individual objection?
I think there's a case for that in terms of infrastructure. So actually, interestingly, the judge in charge of the planning list in the High Court has recently issued a request to service users, so primarily kind of the lawyers and their clients, involved in this area to determine what exactly is strategic infrastructure. So there is a list of strategic infrastructure in the Planning Acts, but there are other types of infrastructure that people consider are strategic in the moment. So certain types of hospitals, for example, might be strategic infrastructure if they have a number of beds, say over 100 beds. But other types of hospital infrastructure that might be really critically important but may not meet that threshold isn't strategic infrastructure, strictly speaking, under the legislation. And so I think we need to define what is strategic infrastructure, like what's critical, what's of importance.
Is that being defined?
Not as clearly as I would like. So I think there's definitely more that could be done. Also to have slightly different processes for that type of infrastructure. And in particular, I think what would be really important is to get the various bodies that are involved at the application stage. So the likes of the National Parks and Wildlife Service that looks after nature, inland fisheries that looks after kind of rivers and lakes, get those sort of bodies involved much earlier for critical infrastructure before the application goes in.
Alice, thank you very much for joining us.
You're
welcome.
That's
Alice Whittaker, partner with the law firm Philip Lee. Breakfast Business with Enterprise Ireland on News Talk.